Welcome back to the She's Electric podcast presented by Hyundai, episode 3. We have an incredible guest on the show, Laura Enovar, and we get to talk through all of her different phases of her life, whether it was her junior career, growing up at Narrabeen, her world junior title, tour life, and then into some big wave surfing. So if you're thinking about getting into big wave surfing or wanted to know more about her life, this is going to be the perfect episode for you guys. Tune in and enjoy. We've made it to another episode. I actually thought you would have been joining in Europe, but are you home?
Yeah, so I'm back home. So my last few months have just been absolutely just sort of crazy, all over the place, just doing like 100 different things. And yeah, just did Europe for 10 days, came home for like a few days, went to China last week, can't even remember what day it is right now. And then, but yeah, just been doing lots of back and forth, sort of ping-ponging around the world. I think I definitely overcommitted, but I'm just like a yes girl, you know. I'm like, yeah, like months in advance, I'll be like, yep, no, I'm coming, I'm doing it. And then all of a sudden it's just like, yeah, I'm like, wow, schedule's crazy.
Should have said no, but that's okay because you're here now. And Laura, we're going to start the episode the same way I start every episode. It's with some like get to know you questions so the audience can kind of get a couple more insights into Laura Enovar. So I did this with Molly and Lane. I'm actually really excited to do it with you. I am quite curious because you're a very like enthusiastic and just like vivacious person. So I'm excited to know your answers. So question number one.
Scared.
If you could tell that you could, no, you're going to be fine. If you were told you could only listen to 3 songs on repeat for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh my gosh. Okay. That is so hard because like I'm the type of person that listens to a song, gets hooked on it and will listen to it every day for about like a month and then just be like, nah, I can't listen to that anymore because I just overdo it. But 3 songs for the rest of my life. Wow. I think I'd have to go, oh my gosh, that's really hard. Oh my gosh, it's just so funny because I feel like music is like you have all these different seasons of life, and I love looking back and being like, that song was for that moment. I can remember like a specific place where like it was just my hype up song. But I remember when I was on tour, I loved Florence and the Machine, Shake It Out. That would be like my like Shake It Out song. And then I loved having like a chill song like Rolling Stones, Wild Horses, and then like In a Bloom by Rufus. I feel like if I could only listen to 3 songs and they were, it's like something for every sort of moment.
Yeah, I like that. You're going through the phase of life and you can like attach memory to that song. I
totally,
like that.
Because like whenever I'm like traveling solo and I just need like, you know, I've landed at like 6 a.m. and I'm super jet lag and I'm like, I don't know where I am. I just chuck In a Bloom on and I'm like, pretend I'm in my own movie, just like walking through the airport, like.
Full main character moment, just like I'm going to be okay.
Totally.
Okay, next question for you, Laura. It's another hard one. Last ever meal, entree, main, dessert. What are you eating?
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Entree's got to be cheese and bickies. main has to be, like, the yummiest. Oh, my God. Okay, entree, cheese, bickies, and, like, a garlic and cheese naan bread, like, really cheesy. Like,
oh, yeah.
Something like that. Main would have to be, like, a mental lasagna or like spaghetti bowl. And then dessert is usually I probably say like a chocolate lava cake, like just the chocolate's just like
exploding. This is like vanilla ice cream on top.
Yes, oh my god, yeah, we can add that in there, like amazing, yum. Okay, I'm
so
hungry.
Good. Okay, I have one last question for you. Your guilty pleasure. Okay, so something that you know you shouldn't do but you do it anyways.
Probably just doom scrolling on like social media, or just driving far too far away to get like a coffee or a drink or something that I like. And I'll be like, you know what? I've got a bit of time today. I'm just craving that one like brownie that's in Avalon. I'm going to drive there and get it.
Just agree with a 30-minute drive.
I'm
just
like, I definitely do not have time for this, but I must go there and collect that. That thing that I'm craving.
I love it. You're dedicated. You're a dedicated human. Well, Loz, I'm stoked. I feel like that was a pretty good little insight into Laura. And they're just like general questions that I think like people should know about.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably going to look back and kick myself about those song selections just because they're so, that's such a broad question, you know, out of your whole life, like what are three songs? And yeah, that's a tricky one. But, you know, I've said it now, can't go back.
No, we'll take it. We'll take it. But basically on the podcast, Laura, I like to kind of take people through a journey, like to go back to the start and then we work our way through. So I want to start off, I always start the episodes the same, school. What was school like for you? Because everyone goes through it. And I could imagine that if you and I went to school together, we would have had a lot of fun.
I know. I feel like you would be the naughty one. I'm sensing.
I was.
Like naughty, but like, like the teacher would be like, Jessie, shut up. Whereas like, so I was randomly, like, but also you're like very conscientious and I'm sure you get all your homework done. But yeah, I reckon you'd just be a chatterbox in class.
I was. I got separated constantly from people.
Yeah, we're like other sides of the room. So I was randomly like a goody two shoes, like sort of like teacher's pet vibes. Like just like, oh my gosh, I will get my homework done on time. But I was hardly ever there. So that was the thing. Like I think in high school, yeah, I was doing like every contest. There were so many pro junior comps and grom comps. Like I was just like, boom, doing a million of them. And I remember like in year 11 or something, I was in maybe year 10 or 11, I was there 4 days in 14 weeks just because I was doing pro juniors, QS, like so many comps around that like 16, 17 year old age. And I was almost thinking of doing homeschool, but my school now being sports high was so like, they were so good about us going to do surfing because they were sports high school. So I wouldn't actually get marked absent when I'd be surfing. So it was great. Like I still looked like my attendance was amazing, even though I was never there. But I definitely remember taking my friend's maths book and photocopying it in the library and copying everything into my book at one point. Yeah, I was like, you know, just trying to catch up, just like copying it. And she was like, yeah, go for it. And I look back and I'm like, wow, what an incredible friend. She let me just copy her homework. And then my teacher was like, you're amazing.
Do you still have friends from school?
Yeah,
oh,
no.
Perfect.
Yeah, no. I think there's like so many of the crew that I went to school with were the surfer guys from Narrabeen. And then some of the girls that I went to school with, they went to different high, like they went end up going like, you know, year 11 and 12 at Freshie or Mater Maria or other schools close by. But yeah, I ended up dropping out in year 11. I think I got like 3 weeks into it and I was like, oh my gosh, can't do this right now. But I think the amazing thing about the school system in Australia is that, you know, I was kind of like, kind of always thought I would, you know, I would finish year 12, but then I just realized, you know, I just got to go for it now with my surfing and all the events that were happening and I'd qualified at 17. So I was like, I'm going to take it and go for it. And then if I want to do a course, I can do that afterwards because I feel like there's
easy,
you know, there's so many opportunities to do courses and go to TAFE or, you know, kind of learn anything you want if you haven't finished school. So that's the amazing thing about Australia because I feel like I'd go to a contest in America and people would be like, whoa, like you didn't finish school. Like I think it's kind of like a different sort of stigma, whereas so many of my friends left school, went to TAFE and were doing like their building courses and stuff. So, yeah, pretty cool.
And while we're on the topic of when you were younger, there seems to be a pretty constant theme with all the guests that we have on the show, and it's usually that they fall in love with a sport before surfing that kind of instigated that competitive drive, that competitive fire. It was a similar kind of story for you?
Yeah, it was. So before I became hooked on surfing, I was obsessed with gymnastics. So my mum was a kindy gym teacher. So she kind of like, she was teaching like kind of the 3 to 4 year olds in the kindy gym, and they were, she'd work there a bunch, and so she'd bring me along and apparently just like hang me on the bars in the gym, and I'd just like be like 2 years old just hanging there. And then eventually I just grew up and became like a full gymnastics girl, had posters on my wall, was like, yep, I'm going to the Olympics for gymnastics. My brother also was an incredible gymnast as well, so we kind of followed each other into all sports. But the problem was that my toes didn't really point like properly and my knees didn't really go completely straight. So no matter how hard I would try, I'd always get deductions because my toes couldn't really point properly. And my gym coaches would send me home and try to put like phone books on my knees to try to like hyperextend them. But just because my knobbly knees were just like, trying to be straight, but just, they just weren't really, like, I just wasn't naturally like flexy girl.
So how did that merge from gymnastics to surfing? Because that's not really a direct, like, correlation between the two sports.
Yeah, no, there's not. But, yeah, we loved the gymnastics, but then my dad was always, like, he surfed his whole life. So all of our holidays as kids were, like, we'd jump in the, like, in the four-wheel drive, be going up the coast, like, camping on the beach. Got epic photos from when we were kids, just, like, me and my brother, mum, dad just camping and surfing, and we... Like, I'd do it when it was, like, you know, up there, like a bit warmer, like jump in the water, but I just still wasn't really hooked. And then we started doing nippers at North Narrabeen Surf Club. And, yeah, like, I just started loving the ocean. Like, I was super confident out, like, and I loved board paddling. And that's when I sort of started surfing, but that was around, like, 10 years old. And it was kind of just, like, once I got the bug for surfing, like, it was just like immediately I was like, Mum, I'm retiring from gymnastics. Me and my brother both kind of retired, as we said, at the same time, because we'd been doing it for like over 7 years or 7 or 8 years. And then, yeah, just once we got the surf bug, it was like nonstop before and after school. Mum and Dad were happy because, you know, we just had surfboards, wetsuits, and it was a lot less expensive than gymnastics. So they were stoked.
And how was it for you? Because obviously when I grew up surfing Northie, like, I had girls like you out there, and I just had Belle and Elle and all these people like looking out for me and looking after me, and obviously all the boys did too. But we now have this like hooked on surfing kind of enthusiastic young Laura. How did that North Narrabeen community take on you as like a really frothing little grump?
Yeah, I know. And I think, you know, back when I first started in the board riders, there wasn't a girls division. So it was basically just me hanging out with the boys. Like, they were all my best friends, all the guys I surf with. Just like you became best friends with all the Northie boys. Like, you know, you just become a family, like, immediately. And, yeah, like, once we started at the board riders, it was just, you know, like, just surfing with your friends every day. It was so fun. Like, my first sponsor was Pies R Us, which was the pie shop across the road from Northie. And all of us kids would literally come in from the surf at like 5 p.m. and they'd be like just like chucking us all the leftover pies from the day. We'd just be ruining our dinner eating these pies. And then well, your uncle as well sponsored me. He was one of my first sponsors with Fudge, which was like I got free hairspray and I was like coloring my hair. And so it was just all so fun. And I think you know, it does become a family. And even though you are one of the only girls out there, you know, I had Elle, who was amazing, Elle Northie, shout out to Elle, and Belle, and, you know, Tessa Jocelyn, Shelley. There was a bunch of the girls in the club that were, you know, we kind of banded together, and we just knew how to, I think, from a young age, just, you know, if we wanted to get waves, we had to sort of fight with, you know, get amongst it with the boys. And I feel like I was like never naturally like super competitive, but because of my upbringing, being around all those boys and my brother, we became competitive with each other. And, you know, that's how I think essentially I got even into surfing bigger waves, just because like we just started pushing each other. And when I was surfing against the boys, you know, I wanted to beat them and they'd be snaking me and I'd have to try to get my waves. And I think it brought out this side of me that I think wasn't really natural, like naturally there.
So you would say that like Narrabeen and the kind of grungy kind of community pretty much set you up, I guess, competitive wise for you to go into that competitive career?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I don't think I'd be where I am if I didn't grow up in Northie board riders, and I owe them so much because all of the guys there, you know, they wrap you up and the support was so immense, but you feel that pressure because they're obviously so proud of you and, you know, you're out competing on the world tour and doing everything, but you want to do your club proud. And then but yeah, like even just going home, I also remember like when you're a kid, you start off at Northie and it's, everything's about like respect your elders. You know, you don't move out of the alley rights until you're old enough. And then you don't like start getting sets until you earn that respect and from the older guys. And I always loved that about Northie. And I mean, I think it's just cool to just be like, you know what, you know, just got to fight for your waves out there, but you got to wait in line and earn them.
Ever been hooked from the first wave or given a pathway to shine? Ever found your tribe amongst the noise? Or sacrificed to stand out amongst your peers? Ever felt the support that gives you the strength to keep going? Or paddled into the unimaginable? Ever met a generation that knows no bounds? Now you can.
Yeah, I feel like that's the way it should be too, but I love the fact that they had such an impact on your career. Another thing I like to do on this podcast is I like my guests to paint some pictures for me because I'm a very visual person. The day that I would like to know most about, now that we're on the topic of North Narrabeen, you won a world junior title at your home break. Take me back to that day because that is absolutely absurd.
Yeah, that was just – that was still, I think I look back and that was – one of the highlights or best days of my life, just because, you know, the board riders meant so much. And I watched that contest for so many years and there was never even girls in the world junior title. It was like, it was always just boys every year. And then the one year I was like 11 or 12 years old and they'd finally put a girls division in the world juniors. And, you know, I got a wild card and I was just this little grom. And I think I remember serving against Jessie Miley Dyer and she just absolutely waxed me in like the third round or something. And then it just gave me that drive every year to come back and try to do better. And then I eventually, you know, won the event. And just like, I remember being out in the final that day and I'd never seen more people down North Narrabeen on the beach. Like it was just packed. Like it was like everyone had found out Laura's in the final at the World Juniors. Like the place was just like, yeah, I've never seen the beach so crowded. And then to win and just have like my whole family and friends and the whole board riders, like instead of having like a Aussie flag, I'm pretty sure I had the Northie flag above my head when I was walking up, like coming up the beach. And it was, yeah, it was just the best. And then, had an epic after party at the surf club there. And just to see, you know, the faces of like all of the guys that basically raised me at the beach and pushed me in the water and were always encouraging me and like trying to like just, you know, just supporting me, I guess, to be able to do that and to see their reaction was like the coolest thing ever. Like there was just the tears were flowing.
I feel like that would have been such a kind of special moment for you to like hold on to and like always come back to, just like having that win and having that glory in front of your hometown.
Oh, totally.
But not long after that, you actually qualified for the CT and then you spent 7 years on tour. I feel like that's kind of when I met you, when you were like peak tour career, but I didn't really get to see or like get to know you too well while you were in that phase of your life. How was tour life? Like what was those 7 years actually like?
Yeah, no, they were an absolute whirlwind. Like it was, you know, qualifying at 17, like almost when I qualified, I remember thinking like, oh, I don't feel ready for this yet. But then I was like, you know, well, I'm going to take the spot because, you know, I've just qualified. That's huge. But I just, in the, you know, like in the depths of my core, I did feel like I wasn't ready. And I feel like that ended up being one of my biggest downfalls just while I was on tour for those first few years. Because I started off with an absolute bang, you know, coming out of like kind of like that no expectation, like let's just get on here and have fun. And that was always my thing. I'm going to have fun. Like I just, you know, I don't want to do it unless it's not fun. And then I got third in my first event and I was like, whoa, like this is amazing. Like I just got third at Snapper. And then the next like four comps, I couldn't make a heat. And it was like, I lost in the next comp. And then I was like, damn, like, you know, this is obviously not like as easy. It's not obviously, it wasn't going to be easy, but just starting with a third and then just going and like having all of the pressure start to build when you're like, okay, now I can't make a heat. Oh no, I can't make another heat. What's going wrong? And then it's like, oh, is it the boards? Is it the mindset? Is it like what's happening? And then I think for the first time in my life, I actually felt like pressure, like full blown, like boiling pressure and anxiety to the point where like, I remember maybe my second year on tour, like I'd always start the year really well, like clear headed and kind of that no expectation. Let's go into it. I've just trained really hard in the off season. Remember the next year I got to my first final with Steph at Snapper. Same thing, couldn't make a heat for like four or five events afterwards. And it was just this same sort of pattern where I'd start really well, but then I just couldn't, you know, back it up. And then I'd fall apart and I just mentally was like, what's going on? And then I remember like, but I was I feel like at that point, like, mental health and, you know, psychologists, like, weren't, like, I just wasn't utilizing that as much as I should have been. And I eventually started speaking to an amazing sports psychologist, but not before I wanted to save myself. And I actually paid like $800 to do a sports psychology course. And I was like, I'm going to be my own sports psychologist. And I was reading all these books and I was like trying to like do everything I could to, you know, fix my mental state and try to just have that mindset. And then I just realized, what are you doing? Just go get someone else in your team to help you to talk through like everything. And that was amazing, you know, that really, I feel like, helped me understand myself and what was going on, and that I was just getting way too sort of emotional, and the pressure and the stress was getting to me, and I was starting to let results define me and define my happiness too much. Like, I'd win, it'd be good, and then I'd lose and it would be bad. And I remember just being like, it shouldn't be this way. You shouldn't feel like a better person for winning and a worse person for losing. But that was happening. And I was like, I've got this all wrong. This is not fun anymore. But that was my first few years in two, and had to sort of really understand myself and what was going on in my head with that.
Would you say you like enjoyed being on tour?
Yeah, no, I had the best times of my life, you know, like traveling the world and doing what I'd always dreamt of doing was, you know, from the moment I got hooked on surfing at 12 years old and the gym posters went down, the posters of Lisa Anderson, Blaine, Megan Abubu, like all of those girls, like Sofia Milanovic, were on my wall, and I was like, I want to be on the world tour. I want to be world champion. And I was there and I was living it. But I do remember there was that time when I was like, oh my gosh, I just, because of my mindset and the pressure, like it became not fun anymore. And I actually remember waking up one day and driving, must have been after the season would finish, because pretty much every year I'd end up on the bubble. So I'd start the year amazing, like a third or like a second, and then just kind of like just go downwards, and then I have to work my way back upwards. And I was always kind of on the bubble every year, and it's like that number 10 is the cutoff. So I'd always been around 8th or 9th or 10th at the end of the year, and just be fighting for like one of those last spots on the tour. So I was also doing the QS, and it was just like, you know, by the end I'd get to the end of the year and just, I'd always, I think I got 10th on tour five times of the 7 years I was on tour. And then the other time was like I got an 8th, and then the other time I was the year I fell off when I was 17th. But it was like I was always right on that bubble, and I was just like, oh my gosh, this is not fun. And I just had to do a lot of self work really to find the fun in surfing and realize what sort of a competitor I wanted to be and what was missing in my life and what was making and how I could keep the fun there and then have an on-off switch. And I think one of the best things I learned one year was like, you know what, instead of going out every day to go train and surf and work on your surfing, work on your boards, I was like, I started getting into like more fun boards, and I was like, I'm going to take a 20 out today. This surf is purely for fun, because we all start surfing for fun, and you need to have that on-off switch if you're competing. And then the other thing I did was go chase swells, because I was like, I always loved big waves. And before I got on tour, I was doing all these epic trips to Pea Pass and Indo, and I was in that film with Nike, the Leave a Message film, and I was just like, I got to have these incredible experiences in perfect big barreling waves, and I was like, I miss that. I need that in my life. And I just remember 2016, I just made this like conscious decision to, in between every surf comp, go chase a swell. So I remember I lost at Snapper, and I was like, oh my God, this is swell going to Fiji. And I just flew home, got my big boards, went to Fiji. Same thing next event, went to Indo, or like went to Pea Pass, and just was getting the waves of my life in between these events. And it was making me surf better and be happier and like not put as much pressure on myself at the events, because my cup was so full and I was just like having fun again. And, you know, I don't know. And it was kind of like, I felt like 2016 was one of my best years on the tour. And then that was the year that I got invited to go to Jaws, because Peter Mell, he'd kind of noticed me chasing all these big swells around and was like, hey, you're charging. Like, do you want to come try surf Jaws in the first ever women's event? And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll try that. And I remember looking at videos of Jaws going, okay, Jaws is a fair bit bigger than like 8 foot Fiji. You're going to have to do some training to be able to go there and not die.
Oh, my God, how stressful. I actually remember that year and talking to your dad down at Northie Car Park, and I think maybe you had just gone, and your dad, Phil, was like, I have never felt so sick and like consistently sick, and she hasn't even surfed yet.
I know.
I was like,
I know. That was the funniest thing. I remember every day I'd be like looking at videos of Jaws, and I remember Peter Mel was like, hey, we're probably only going to run the girls, you know, 15 foot max, like we're just going to make sure it's a glassy, like not windy day. And I was like, yeah, cool. So I remember Googling like 15 to 18 foot Jaws, and I was thinking I could do that. And then the next day I was like, nah, not going. It was like the biggest flip flop. Like one day I was like, I'm going. And I'd been doing all my breath hold training. And you know, I started like pumping things up in the gym, and I was like, yeah, I'm going. But the thing was, I got invited in September, and the waiting period started in October, and it went till March. And I was like, yeah, surely when I start training in October, like I'll be fit enough. I ordered my boards. I'd ordered everything. And I was expecting, you know, this event's not going to run till January. Anyway, the event runs like mid-October, called on, first swell of the year. Didn't have my boards ready. Had been doing 3 weeks of breath hold training, like 3 weeks of training. And I was like, oh, my God, I do not feel ready. But, like, I can't. I remember just thinking, like, I'm not ready, but I also was thinking, okay, you got your breath hold up to like 3.5 minutes. Like, you're a strong paddler. You're fit. You know, there's going to be the best water safety in the world there. You don't have a board, but, you know, Greg Long and Ian Walsh are going to lend you all this stuff. You'll go over there, you try it the day before, and then, you know, you'll just see how you go. And it ended up being just like the wildest experience of my life, because it was not 15 foot and glassy. It was like 20 to 25 foot and like crazy windy. And the board that I was training on the day before, that was just like far too small. So I was on this big boat, and yeah, wild experience.
At that point in time, was that the biggest you've ever surfed? Like, was that event hands down like the biggest?
That was the biggest wave I'd ever seen in my life. And I only saw Jaws breaking for the first time when I got to the boat, when I got on the boat and went to the surf break 30 minutes before my heat. So the first time I saw it in the flesh actually breaking was 30 minutes before my heat. And I remember I jumped on the back of one of the skis with the guys. No, it was actually with Greg Long, and he took me out the back and was showing me kind of all the lineups, and we were just watching the waves, and I was like looking at these waves, the biggest waves I've ever seen, and I just couldn't believe how gnarly it was. And I was like, whoa, this is intense. And I was, my whole thing with going and saying yes to that was that if I got there and said no, like, that's totally okay. And I was like, look, like, I didn't actually feel the pressure to go out there and charge. I was like, it's so big and gnarly, like, if I don't catch a wave, like, people aren't gonna, you know, judge me. But then, I mean, they probably would just be like, the girls can't catch a wave. But we went out there and all of us just like absolutely sent it. And my first wave, I remember paddling, being out there, and I was like, I don't even know what a big wave is or what like a huge wave is. Like, and then this lump came through, and I was like, I've got this. I'm in the spot. I was like, put my head down, was paddling, felt the wave lift me up, and I was like, I'm on. And then I like took off and realized, like, holy shit, you're not on this at all. Like, you're at the top of the wave. And I remember just like bailing out the back. And then for a second, I thought I'd gotten over it. Like, and it wasn't even sucking me over the falls, but the wave's just so big that there's just a massive delay in getting sucked over the falls. And it sucked me over. And I just got like absolutely like completely smoked. But it's somehow like, the wave just like pushed me down super deep and then like pushed me up kind of in the same spot. And I just like shot out of the sky, like of the water into the sky, and was like, wow, kind of like got away with that one. Like, felt like I got away with murder.
Ever been hooked from the first wave? or given a pathway to shine? Have you ever found your tribe amongst the noise? Or sacrificed to stand out amongst your peers? Ever felt support that gives you the strength to keep going? Or paddled into the unimaginable? Ever met a generation that knows no bounds? Now you can.
I remember watching that being like, she is nuts. Like I remember thinking, but before we get more into your big wave, I've got to know, because it sounds like that 2016 was amazing. Yeah. If you had those 7 years on tour again, do you think you would have done it differently and done a bit more like that?
I think, you know, I look back often and wish that I could have done things differently I had a different mindset, had more self-worth and not let like results define me the way they did at, you know, those first couple of years. But I think that every experience you go through is what makes you grow into the person you are. And you know, like I've had people say like, oh, like, yeah, would you just go back and try to do it now that you feel like, you know, you can understand yourself more. And I think the reality was that I was just young and I just was experiencing these emotions and feelings for the first time in my life, and I just didn't know how to cope with them or deal with them or how to, get the help that I really needed and really shift that mindset. But it's funny because even after I started big wave surfing, I remember I went back to a couple of contests and I just was like, oh, the love just wasn't there anymore. Like I just... the person I am when I'm surfing big waves is like this person that I wish that I could be when I was out in the heat. Like I'd be out of the heat.
Right.
Yeah, I'd be out of the, I remember I was like out of the heat at like 2 foot Huntington Beach and I was like filled with fear and I was like, oh my gosh, like you're actually like so filled with fear and this is not a death-defying situation at all. But then I'd be at one of the biggest waves, scariest waves in the world, and I'm not filled with fear. I'm the most focused, like, in the zone version of myself. And I was always like, why can't that girl be work over in that environment? Like it still confuses me to this day. And I'd be curious to know like how this person that I can be in big wave surfing could compete if she could pull her stuff shit together in that environment. But, you know, I think I look back and I just knew my mindset, and my mindset competing was my biggest weakness. But my mindset when I surf big waves is my biggest strength. So I just, you know, you got to take the light and the dark and love it all. And I think I look back with no regrets. And I had an incredible time, met the best friends on tour, got to travel the world. And, you know, I had a lot of fun in between. So I definitely look back and I'm like, wow, that was a cool season of my life.
I feel like, though, that mindset that you have with big wave surfing, it's such an asset, because so many people fall off tour and they almost don't fade away, but you just slowly stop hearing about them, where I feel like you fell off tour and it's just like, boom, like your career is almost at like an all-time high. Like you came out, you released a movie, you surfed in Jaws, you started, everyone was just like, whoa, like we didn't know she was going to, like, when did she charge? But we didn't know she charged like that. Do you feel like it was almost a blessing in disguise falling off tour for you?
Well, yeah. So I guess the thing was I didn't like – so basically I got injured at that Jaws event after I had that one fall that looked like I should have died. The next wave actually
– yeah.
The next wave I actually blew my knee out on that. And so I got the – like just from the force of, you know, just being taken out by that wave and getting tossed around underwater, I did like a really bad MCL tear. And the adrenaline was pumping so much that at the time I felt it tweak underneath the water and I was like, oh, that didn't feel good. But then like the adrenaline's pumping, I paddled back at the back and then I realized, oh no, this isn't good. Like my knee really hurts. Went back to the boat and then the thing just swelled up and I couldn't even do the final because the doctor was like, nah, you can't go out there. You've like fully torn your MCL. You've blown your knee out. And so after that was October, and I still, like, I went home and basically, you know, it's like MCL tears 4 months out of the water at that, you know, from what I was hearing from my doctor, possible surgery. but then we wanted to just try work on it naturally and not have to get surgery. And I remember I actually surfed in the last event of the year with a knee brace on at Honolulu Bay after I'd done that injury. And it was just like, yeah, it was just rough. Like I'd qualified already. I think I was in 10th that year or 9th. And so I did qualify, but the next year I couldn't do the first couple of events on tour. And then I was kind of hoping to get the injury wild card, but then another girl got injured. Malay Manuel got injured as well. And she also did her MCL. And so then when I didn't have the chance of getting the wild card, I just fell off because I only did end up doing like 6 events. So at the end of that year, I'd fallen off and I remember thinking, okay, cool. We either go back to the QS or we just go for it with big wave surfing. And my last couple of events that year when I was in like 15th or 16th, 17th, I was just like, I remember I was surfing those heats and I was just like, nah, like I need to, like I don't want to do this anymore. Like I just, all I could think about in my whole recovery with my MCL was getting back to Jaws, getting back to the big wave world. And like, I think my family and all my team were like, all right, cool. She just got like the worst injury of her career, like surfing Jaws. Surely she's just going to get better and then get back to the tour. And just, you know, she was on a roll. 2016 was like one of my best years before that injury. And I felt like I was finally finding my groove. And then going to Jaws just threw the biggest spanner in the works. And I was just like, I just had my blinders on. I was like, I can't go back to the tour. I have to go back and do big wave surfing. Like, and that's kind of where it all sort of went. And I remember being so stubborn that I was like, okay, you could do big wave surfing and the QS. But I was like, no. I was at this crossroads and I was like, I'm going to pick one road and I don't care if I lose my whole entire ranking on the QS. I have to start from the beginning one day if I realize I've made the biggest mistake of my life. But I'm going to go for it with big wave surfing, and that's kind of what I did.
And then you made Undone, which was such a brilliant film. I remember watching the premiere, I think we were in Mossman, and it was just, I was shocked. And you basically documented your whole journey from like, you know, okay, I really want to take this seriously. Let's get better at this. How did you feel actually doing all of that on camera? Because yeah. I feel like it was so raw and it was so honest.
Yeah. It was, that was such an incredible journey. And I think that was like one of the main things we wanted from Undone was to show everyone, you know, like, yeah, I've decided to take this path. It's not going to be easy. I remember 2018, the first year that I was filming that doco was one of the hardest years of my life because I decided to go down this unknown path. My sponsors were like, you should be on tour. My supporters and coaches and stuff were all like, you know, you should be on tour. They've just done, like, they just announced equal prize money. Everything, like, you know, my boards and everything were amazing. And I just left and was like, no, I'm doing this. And I remember sometimes, like, I'd had a few injuries that year with the big wave stuff. And I would be like at home in the middle of winter, like with an injury, like watching all the girls on the QS or the tour, you know, and just being like, oh my gosh, have I absolutely blown it? Like, have I made the wrong choice? And I remember I just had to keep pushing through and being like, remember your why, Laura, like you are doing this for you, for no one else. But yeah, it was like, we didn't really know what was going to happen when we were filming the movie. Like we didn't know, where it was going to take us really. I just knew that I wanted to just keep finding my confidence in big waves and keep showing up and, you know, because I feel like when I first started showing up to some of these waves, the guys were like, what the hell is she doing here? And then I was like, I felt the need to prove myself for others. And that is like, that's the worst thing you can do. I remember trying to the first like couple of months being like, I'm going to prove myself so much. And then I just remember everything was going wrong and falling apart and I was getting injured and I was like, whoa, like, what's going on? Like, this is like not how I was expecting it to be. And then I just realized one day, I was like, you're doing this for other people. Like, this is like, yeah, like you're forgetting your why. And I remember just from that day, I was like, you are doing this for you. The only person you need to prove yourself to is yourself. And you just need to do this purely because you want to do it and forget about the rest of the world, forget about, like, don't fall into the same trap that you're falling into on the tour. Like, just do this for you. And then it was like, once I made that conscious decision that everything I was going to do was be for me, I was going to say yes or no whenever I wanted to at work when I was down at the surf. Like, I'd taken the control back, and I was just, and things started falling into place and all this magic started happening. And then I was like getting the waves in my life, and it was just, it was incredible. Like, it was, and it was just, I think, like, as soon as I was like just doing it from the heart, it was, yeah, everything started just working out.
This episode of the She's Electric podcast is proudly brought to you by Hyundai, Australia's trusted and leading car brand. Whether you're heading to your favorite surf spot or exploring new breaks, Hyundai has the perfect vehicle for every adventure. With the stylish Tucson, the tough Santa Fe Hybrid, and the all-electric Kona, Hyundai ensures you've got the wheels and the accessories to get you from wherever you are to the beach with ease. As major partners of Surfing Oz since 2018, Hyundai are supporting the sport at all levels, championing equality and driving real change. Check out the full range of vehicles at hyundai.com.au or head to your nearest dealer today.
And then that rolled into you now the Guinness World Record holder, which is absolutely insane. That day, that wave, all of it just looked crazy to someone like me who, like, I just think I would never go waves like that. But then I look at you and I'm like, how? Did you know that, did it feel like you were breaking records when you were paddling into that wave?
Oh, I feel like the wildest thing when I look back at that day and that session was, you know, I feel like in the lead up to that, I knew that I'd dedicated my life to big wave surfing, and every day, you know, when I wake up and I you know, jump in the gym or I do everything, it's like, it's to make sure that, like, when I'm in the moment out in the surf, I can just be the best version that I can be at that moment. And but I never came into big wave surfing being like, I want to win the big wave world title, I want to break a world record. Like, I decided that I didn't want any accolades from this. I didn't even care if I didn't make a cent from big wave surfing. I was like, I'm just doing this for me. And I think that's what was so, like, incredible about that wave, was that I was out there that day. I'd been invited to the Eddie as an alternate, and the Eddie was running that day. It was the biggest, best session in 5 years, and like the biggest, best swell in 5 years. And, you know, so everything was happening. And instead of sitting on the beach and kind of waiting to be an alternate if someone got hurt, I was like, nah, I'm going surfing. And me and Felicity Palmateer were like, let's go do this together. And it was just huge out there. And I remember getting out there and being like, wow, this is huge. These were the biggest waves I've ever seen. But it was glassy, and being petite, like, glassy conditions are like the best thing that can happen to me and to, like, a small big wave surfer, because not having to deal with the lump and bump when you're paddling into one of those big waves is just, it's so much easier. And it was just like, it felt like when that wave came and I was in the perfect spot, it was just like the pinnacle of my career. And, like, every season of my life was just, like, coming together at that one point. And I just remember looking at that wave and going, like, yes, like, F yes, let's go. Like, put your head down, go, you're in the perfect spot. And I'd positioned myself, like, 10 minutes before that into that spot, just out of intuition. Just, like, I remember being like, I just feel like if I move, like, 15 metres further out and across, wider from the path, like, I just feel like that's the spot. And then literally this wave came and I was like, it just felt like a gift. And I was like, let's go, took off. And then just remember it, like, looking down being like the hugest thing ever, and was like, just make this drop, otherwise you are going to absolutely eat shit. And then I made the drop, and then I remember looking up and it was like an apartment building coming down. And oh, it was just wild. It exploded me after that, and I got, like, the craziest hold down. But I remember I was like, I didn't even care. I just had this huge smile on my face underwater. And then I realized, okay, there's actually four sets behind that wave. So you need to not smile and go into, like, you got to survive mode. And I got, like, one of the, like, gnarliest hold downs of my life, the second wave, and got pushed all the way in. And after that, when I realized I was, like, in the clear on the inside, I was just like, whoa, like, that was the best. Like, it was so, so amazing. And But I thought no one saw the wave, because like there was hardly any photographers out that day because everyone was down watching the eddy. And so I remember coming into the beach and I'd seen a few of the guys on the beach and they're like, "How'd you go?" I was like, "I just got like the best, like the wave of my life." And they're like, "That's sick." And then, but you know, for like a few days, I was like, everyone was like, "How'd you go?" I was like, "I got the best. I got such a sick one. I'm just so stoked." You know, that's the end of conversation. And then like, you just don't talk about it anymore. Cause like, I guess people are like, "Oh, cool. Good one." And then carry on. Got nothing to show for it, so we don't really believe you. And then I remember like 4 days later, I got like an Instagram message from one of the photographers and he sent me the photo and he was like, I remember his words were like, this is the biggest wave paddled into by a woman. And I was like, what? And I remember seeing the photo and I was just like, oh my gosh. Like, I knew it was big, but this angle of the photo, just the wave looked huge. And yeah, when I showed everyone after that, it was like 4 days later, they were just like, what? Like, are you serious?
I told you.
Like, yeah, I was like, oh, no, like I knew it was big, but I actually didn't think it was that big. Like, and they were like, you are nuts. Like, what is wrong with you? Like, go to a psychologist. And I was like, no, I'm good, I'm good. It was fun. But, yeah, and then I got to submit that photo and that video into the Guinness World Record, like, race that they did with WSL, and they measured it and said it was the world record. So yeah,
that's insane. Pretty amazing. And obviously you have the reward, which is crazy. Like you're the Guinness World Record holder, which is insane.
So crazy. I know.
Is that wave in itself more the reward than actually having the recognition for it?
Oh, absolutely. I think you know, because I think I submitted my wave in April and they didn't announce the world record till November. I mean, even in the 4 days where I hadn't even seen the photo, like I got to enjoy this moment where I was like, that for me is just, that was the pinnacle of my career. It felt like everything had come together and I got to like reflect so much like around the time of getting that wave on like everything that I'd sort of been through and I was just like proud of myself. I was like, wow, like that was just so awesome. And I was like, I didn't even care if no one even saw the photo and if no one ever saw the wave. Like that for me was just this moment that I'll like never forget and treasure forever. And then to obviously see the photo and then, you know, months later have the recognition, I was just like, I don't know, it was a cherry on top, but I'd already felt like I'd won anyway. So it was just, and that's the beauty, I think, of big wave surfing. You know, you're out there and surfing these like incredible swells that like you need all of the stars and the elements to align. They're so rare to have these beautiful days like that. And then to get out there and actually like, you know, get one of those waves. I'm like, that's what I love about big wave surfing. It's like, you know, I think you never know when the swells are coming. And then you just, when they come, you just got to go for it and say yes and drop everything. And then, you know, you may or you may not even get a wave out there. But it's just all a part of the journey. Like you just don't, there's so many unknowns to it. And then there's that whole side of it being so dangerous, but we just don't think about that. We prepare for that, but we don't think about it.
People like me think about it.
Yeah.
So I have not on those waves, but
yeah,
does it stop there for you, you know, or is there more goals you want to achieve with your big wave surfing?
Yeah, I think my goals in big wave surfing have always been like really personal, like, you know, just kind of chipping away at things. Like I remember the first time I went to Shippies, I was like, okay, next time I want to go, I want to try to get like that little bit deeper or ride the wave slightly different. And it's kind of just finding these little things like, you know, I want to go back to that same wave I got my world record, but I want to knife it harder and try to like get in the barrel or something. And then, you know, same at Jaws, like I'd love to get away from the peak and ride to the channel. And so all these little things are goals of mine, but I just also love with big wave surfing, you don't need to put a time limit on it. Like, you know, I might, those goals you can just chip away at for years, but kind of work towards every day. But yeah, it's kind of the beauty of big wave surfing. It's, you can do it at your own time. And, you know, it's just like, yeah, it's an amazing sport. And when you're out there with like all these other incredible big wave surfers, you just like share such a special day together. Like I remember when I was in Fiji this year for this It's like the best swell, the best thundercloud swell in 5 years. And everyone's come from around the world to be there for that one day, for that one, like, it was like 4 hours in the morning before the wind came up. And everyone's getting the waves of their life. And you're just like hooting and hollering at everyone. And they just, those memories get like sizzled into your brain and they're the best.
Yeah, it almost feels like big wave surfers have like more of a family environment because you actually really have to look out for each other in
totally.
Places like that.
Yeah, and it is. It's all about, you know, I think big wave safety has come so far in, you know, the last 10 years, I think, you know, especially with the, you know, the pool vest now and being able to, you know, just I think have your safety team out there with you and, you know, hiring water safety and wearing helmets and putting everything in place so that we can come home to our families and do what we love. Mm. But yeah, everyone looks out for each other and it's, you know, at the end of the day, everyone wants to get home safe. And that's the most important thing. It's like, push yourself, have fun, but kind of know your limits, trust your gut and yeah, have a safety team. Like it's so important to have that safety team.
Would you say for someone who's like starting out in big wave surfing to even just like watch a few before you throw yourself in?
Yeah, I mean, when I look back at kind of when I first started and I was throwing myself into some crazy waves, like I threw myself into that wave at Jaws and like, you know, all my friends and family are like, holy crap, you've got some guardian angels looking out for you. And I mean, I've had injuries but nothing like too gnarly yet. But, you know, that's why when I started Undone, I was like, you know, I want to work my way up. I want to learn how to ride these waves properly. I don't want to get the wife out of the day every swell event. But also, if you do get the wife out of the day, don't be embarrassed about it. Because I remember for a while I was embarrassed about getting the wife out of the day. I was like, oh my gosh, like this is, you know, this is not good. But like the only way that you can learn is to, yeah, have those wipeouts and then you can recorrect. But it's just chipping away at it. Yeah, chip away. Even if you're going to try like surf bigger waves, like get out there and go, I watched all day at Shippies, watched for like 8 hours almost. And I towed into my waves at the very end of the day after watching and trying to like see what all these guys were doing and try to visualize their lines. Like visualization to me in big wave surfing has been like just the key to, you know, being able to like realize that like I'm capable of what they're doing, but I need to visualize the line I'm going to take. And yeah, so that's probably like the, I don't know, I guess the main thing I would say is just chip away at it and believe.
Chip away at it. And yeah, and have a go, I guess. I feel like that's something you've always, or I guess Narrabeen, but you as well, because you were like a mentor to True and I growing up. Just have a go, have a dig. Like you were never like, nah, don't do it. Just like,
I know.
Give it a go.
It's like, even if you want to try paddle out, like don't, because I remember at Northie when it would get big, the paddle out was so hard. And I remember one time when I was like 13, I was like trying to paddle out and I got swept down the beach like 3 times and I could never break through, but I just kept trying. And I was like, you know what? It was totally okay for me to give up and walk up the beach and be like, you know, I didn't get out today, but I was just like, no, I'm literally going to try until my arms fall off to get out. And I eventually remember getting out and I just sat so wide, was out the back, and it was huge. And then I was kind of like, oh gosh, well, I guess the only way in is to get a wave. And you know, you just, it's just kind of like slowly but surely. But that's why I love seeing, you know, all the girls on tour, you know, like when I was on tour, that was the first year that Fiji had come back. And, you know, we didn't have those opportunities, or none of us had really put ourselves in like really gnarly waves of consequence before that contest got on the tour schedule. And now you see the young girls that are just going around the world and are so comfortable in these waves because they know we've got to compete there, and they've seen all of the girls step up and start charging. And it's kind of like once you see one girl doing it, you just are like, oh my gosh, I can do that too. Like you just, it becomes this contagious thing where you're like, you know, everyone's pushing each other, and, you know, it makes you feel like if you were going to give it a crack, you could definitely do it too.
I feel like you and all those women you're talking about have just been like pushing and pushing and pushing for like women in like scary waves and scary situations. Is there anything like next on the cards for you, though, like another barrier you kind of want to break down for women surfing?
I think I'm not really sure if there's any sort of barriers I'd like to break down, but I think there's just, you know, I'd love to be able to, you know, go like I said before, go to Jaws, try to get a wave there. You know, I've got my eyes on waves around the world that I'd love to surf. And I think that's the crazy thing. Like whenever you go to a new wave, all these new fears and emotions come up, and it's kind of like you get to try to conquer that wave. And you, even if you fail in that wave, the next time you go back, you're like, I'm going to give it a shot again. And that's kind of just the beauty of it. Like just trying to, I even love watching Nathan Florence. Like he tried to go to the right recently and paddle it on his YouTube, and he got there and he was just like, nah, it didn't work out today. But it's like you have these little like things that you just want to work towards, and like his is paddling the right. Mine would be like nuts. Very different to him. Mine would just be like paddling into a wave at Jaws and trying to like even get close to the barrel. But yeah, it's just, it's exciting to know this, and there's always something to work on.
Oh, definitely. And like even I guess having up this platform here on She's Electric to be able to like have you on here and tell your story and inspire other women, like I feel like that's a really cool thing that we have now that maybe you didn't have when you were growing up and you were my age.
Absolutely. Like it was wild because I remember sort of sharing my feelings and opening up to a couple of the older girls when I got older about how I felt on tour. And you know, I feel like people now talk about that pressure and that stress and that feeling that I was going through at the time, but I didn't think anyone else was feeling it. And, you know, even so many of the guys now opening up about just, you know, just mental health and looking after yourself and, yeah, finding that balance and being resilient and stuff. So I guess I think it's just so amazing to hear these stories and to share the stories of, you know, the incredible likes of Lane Beachley and then also Molly Picklum coming through and just, you know, you have that. We've kind of got all the generations here on this podcast that you're doing, which is so cool.
Oh, it's great. I've loved having every single person on. And Laura, like I've said, you've been like a big sister to me for forever long now, literally my entire surfing career.
You're the
career.
Best, Jessie.
You have just helped me so much, inspired me so much, but so many other women, like worldwide. Like I have so many friends like, you know, Laura Enova? I'm like, yeah. But if we can wrap up the podcast with one last thing, if you could give the most Laura Enova quote of all time to inspire someone, what would it be?
Oh, gosh, the quotes. Oh, I just love the quote. You know, you're not a tree. You can always get up and you can move, you can recreate, you can, you know, transform and grow. And well, I guess trees grow too, but you can actually just move and do whatever you want. Like if you want to go for something, just give it a crack. Like don't be afraid to fail. Go for it.
You're not a tree, everybody.
I mean, we can grow like trees, but we don't need to stay in the same place like a tree. Let's move.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Laura. This has been fun.
Thank you, Jessie. You're the best. Love your work.
I've
loved it. Proud of you.
Oh, thank you. What an incredible episode that was. I mean, I've known Laura my entire life and even I learned new things about her today. She has such an incredible story and I honestly feel like it's just here. She's got so much more to give. She's got so much more to achieve. So thank you so much, Laura, for coming on the show. But exciting news, everyone. The Hyundai She's Electric season is over. Our top five have been announced and the winner is going to be announced at the Surfing Australia Awards tonight. So tune in to Surfing Australia's socials to see who is going to win. And we'll see you for the next episode, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in. Bye.